You found something?
Yes, my lord.
That's it. The rebels are there.
My lord, there are so many uncharted settlements.
That is the system. Set your course for the Hoth system.
As long as everybody behaves, this will be quick and painless.
Did you hear that? We're doomed.
Welcome to Echo Base, your weekly water cooler discussion exploring Star Wars news, issues, mythology, and understanding that galaxy far, far away.
We will use all our resources to unravel this mystery.
Dodging Imperial probe droids while leaving no topic unturned in this frozen wasteland.
You're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
Now live. Dock the snowspeeders and lock up the tauntauns. It's time for Echo Base.
It's not Tatooine, that's for sure.
All wings report in.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
Red 11 standing by.
Red 5 standing by.
Red 2 standing by.
Right now I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself.
Cut the channel, Red 2.
Standby alert.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the base.
Close the doors.
Yes, sir.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. This is, what are we on now? Episode 59.
Yep.
59.
Sounds good.
All right. So we are your three hosts, your trifecta of Star Wars knowledge, or at least we pretend that way.
I'm not sure we have a lot of knowledge, but...
Yeah, well, we do our best. It's not about knowing all the answers. It's about faking it well enough to make people think that you know all the answers.
People call us out and stuff all the time.
That's true.
Because we're, you know, not always right.
Well, no. It's that we purposely make mistakes to get the audience engaged.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So they then contact us to call us out. See, this is something that we do for the sake of our community. We do this for you out there. We make mistakes purposely so that you have this extra additional way to interact with us for the good of the community. See, everybody has a role to play, and we're doing our part for the Star Wars fan community. Nobody's buying that, are they?
No.
I tried. I get an A for effort. Come on.
We'll give you that. Yeah.
All right. Well, so this is our episode of Echo Base for Tuesday, May 10th, also officially across the world known as Deadpool Day. But that's a story for a different podcast. We are here to talk about Star Wars. But first, we have a quick little update. We want to give a special thank you, a special shout out to, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Johan from Sweden, or Sweden. I'm not, again, can't do the accents and all that, but he created the Echo Base logo that we're now using, kind of the retro Empire Strikes Back type logo with the little snow crusting over the letters. Looks awesome. Looks very cool. And we really appreciate the work he did on that. So we wanted to give a shout out to him. We actually should have done it last episode, but we wanted to open this episode with that. So Johan, thank you very much for that. You did great work. We really appreciate it. And we're going to continue using this going forward because we think it looks awesome. So first up in the news, something I just threw in the show notes at the last minute because Lou logged in, looked at the show notes and said, what are you burying the lead? And I'm like, which lead are you referring to? And he told me and I'm like, oh, no, I'm not so much burying it. It's not there at all.
Well, you know, it was a week ago and it was right after we recorded last time.
Yeah. Go figure.
So it seems like it's been out for a long time. And all of a sudden say, oh yeah, we got to talk about that.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because there's when you have May the 4th, there are so many different things that are out there that it's like, well, you don't want to talk about all the stuff everybody else is talking about. And you want to talk about the things that slip through the cracks. But then the stuff that slips through the cracks, you only want to talk about it if it's interesting. And then, you know, it happened like we're recording the day before May the 4th. which doesn't really help us. So it's like, it's a week later and we forget because it's like, oh, yeah, everybody's talked about that. But we haven't talked about it on the show. Really obnoxious. Yeah. Anyway, so the important thing is Celebration Orlando, which everybody was expecting, has been officially announced, which nobody was expecting, because normally this gets announced at the end of the current celebration. So people were thinking that Celebration Europe on the last day during the closing ceremonies, they would be announcing the following celebration convention, because it's kind of tradition. However, on May the 4th this year, they announced Celebration will be in Orlando in 2017, April 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th. And that's going to be over Easter weekend. So, I unfortunately didn't get my hotel reservations yet. I completely forgot about it. Because I was waiting to hear whether my wife was going to go with me. And it turns out she is, may God have mercy upon my soul. My wife is going to apparently be going with me to Celebration.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah, nice for everybody who wants to show up and laugh at me with her. So, I'm sure we can set up a Mrs. Blythe booth. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, she plans to go, and then we're going to get some, we're going to try to make sure that we get as many of our random chatter staff there as we can, and try to get hotel room reservations and all that. You know, really the hotels are the hardest thing to arrange in advance. It seems like the flights, you can kind of get that whenever. Tickets, you do have to, you know, get tickets within a certain time period, but, hopefully we'll end up with press passes anyway, so it won't matter that much. But the hotels are really what can kind of make or break that.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get my hotel until, I think it was like December or January.
Yeah.
Something around that one. I think it was January now that I think about it. So before the last one.
Now,
so,
Chris, you were pretty far away. You weren't actually like... I mean, you were volunteering with the Force.net at the time, but you weren't really considered core staff at that time, so you didn't actually travel with the rest of the group. Mm-hmm. And then fortunately, you were cool enough to, you know, to hang out with us at the Forcecast booth anyway, and from that experience kind of became part of the core staff. But you stayed kind of far away, didn't you? You had a bit of a drive to come in, right?
No.
Yeah, you were a pretty good walk, though. I mean, it wasn't too bad. Yeah. We walked by it a couple
like,
times. We went to
oh, was it walking distance?
Yeah, it was like 5-10 minutes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's not that bad.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was okay. Much better than you know, I thought Chris, it was going to be.
Chris, now, you know, I remember because I remember walking with you to dinner. If only Eric doesn't remember walking with us to dinner.
No, but, yeah. I remember, but I didn't remember if, like, then you left afterward. I was trying to think. Somebody kept driving. I know Justin drove. Maybe it was Kyle that stayed.
It was Kyle
bit.
That
okay.
stayed.
I think it was him.
Okay, yeah. That's right. I remember that someone had come in and driven in with a family member in and out. But okay. Well, I mean, I don't mind a walk. It's a question of how much you're going to carry around with you. But I mean,
well, that's the thing. You got to figure out what the walking is going to be. It's in Florida, so it's not too bad temperature wise, probably.
Yeah, not in April.
Yeah, no, I picked up one here. Just looking online now and. Available dates are 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th. So it starts on the 13th, which you'd missed the first day at this hotel. But yeah, you know, there's ways to find around this. And
well, if you have to stay at a different hotel for the 13th and then move over to the other.
Yeah, and ideally maybe you can down a little bit earlier and do Disney beforehand. Yeah,
that's what I'd like to try to do.
Yeah.
Of course, my son would never forgive me. But you know, there's no way I'm going to do.
Disney is not for children. This is a working trip for the Force Guy.
Seriously. That's the main reason I'm not going to take him is because it will actually be a legitimate working trip for us. So I wish we had the money to actually set up a booth. Not that we'd really have anything to exhibit or display, but.
It was nice having the, you know, landing place we had.
Yeah.
At, last celebration, that was kind of nice in Anaheim.
That's the thing. There are two aspects of it. One is having that landing place, and the other is having I mean, I liked having the stage where we can just go and record anytime, and we're right there in the middle of the audience, you know, the autograph hall and everything. It's just, I think we mismanaged ourselves again, which is my fault. But like now I know how to go about doing that correctly, and now we won't ever have that opportunity again. Kind of a
bummer. Hopefully they will have the podcast stage like they did last time, and we'll have to be part of that at some point.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. And we're going to get to enjoy the convention.
Yeah,
as a fan, and see more stuff, hopefully.
I mean, that's the thing. No matter what happens, we are absolutely going to enjoy the heck out of it. We're going to meet up with a lot of people, and we're not going to be... one of the nice things about having it was that we had a landing pad. We had a headquarters there on the convention floor. But on the other hand, we also had kind of an obligation, and we had to spend time there. And we won't have that this time around. We'll have a lot more freedom to cover things how we want to cover them, to be where we want to be at different times. For me to stalk DJ Elliot and, you know, to find out every event he's going to go to. And you know, I think I'm not entirely sure. And he may have changed things up a little bit because, you know, he's located out of Florida. I'm not. But I think I've got pretty much all of his set lists memorized by now. So it's really sad. I've listened to his stuff so much. Just quick side note here, and I'm tempted to like tweet him and say, hey, we dropped your name in the Echo Base episode this week, but then I'd feel even more stalkerish. But and I'm probably going to do it anyway. But I think at this point, I've listened to his stuff on SoundCloud so often that if you take one song and the transition from one track into another, I can probably identify, okay, that's from the 501st Bash in 2015. Or, okay, that one is from The Coolest Summer Ever 2015, but it's the second set, not the first set. Or, okay, that one's from the Halloween one back in 2014. Yeah, it's pretty bad. But it makes for great background music in the shop at work. You know, it's got a good beat. It gets you going. You get motivated. And I tell you what, he is... go and listen to The Coolest Summer Ever. I think it's the... Oh, great. Now I'm going to make a fool of myself after having just bragged about being able to identify a thing. I think it's the first of the two tracks. Mixes Taylor Swift with Iron Man.
Oh, cool.
That's interesting.
What is it? Black Sabbath, the Ozzy Osbourne guitar riff there. If I've got the right song there. I'm not really much into Black Sabbath. But yeah, I tell you what, DJ Elliott is the only DJ I've ever heard that can make Taylor Swift sound good. Or at least make Taylor Swift music somewhat appealing to me. I'm not saying she doesn't sound good or that she's not a good musician. I'm just saying not interested. And yet every time he mixes something together of hers, I'm like, okay, that's actually not bad. Maybe I should, you know, listen to Taylor Swift. And then I listen to the track and I'm like, oh yeah, that doesn't sound like what DJ Elliott does. Where's the heavy metal guitar? It's not there. Where were we? Oh, Celebration Orlando. So, real quick, you know, we've talked on and off about our plans. In the past, you know, we kind of owe a quick shout out to Philip from TheForce.net because, you know, he arranged for the staff to go in the past. And we're not going to have that this time around. We're hoping that the Patreon donations and stuff will help us get out there. We get a decent amount from Patreon. We don't actually get nearly enough to send us out there. So we're going to have to cover a lot of it on our own, but we will be there, at least Lou, Chris, and I, hopefully, and of course Jay from the various different TV podcasts on the Random Chatter Network, but also of Jedi Journals. Jay will definitely be there. Josh went last year. I assume Josh is going this year again. Let's see, Mike from the Sabacc Table was there last year. I don't know if Nate's going to be able to go because it's a busy time of year for work for him. So, but as many of us as can go, will be going. We are definitely going to be setting up some type of a get together. And we hope to see everybody there if we can.
Should be fun.
Yeah. And we're going to try to make New York Comic Con this year too.
And we might be looking for a place to stay too. So
at which one? At both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you know. Hmm. If only we knew someone who lived in Orlando.
With room for like eight.
Well, if we brought sleeping bags, maybe he has a garage. I'll ask him.
Put a tent up in his backyard?
Actually, I mean, if we had to. When you think about how much money we'd save in hotels.
Yeah, right, it'd be right. Free.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll talk to him. Tomorrow night, I think we're... Yeah, we'll... I don't want to mention any names on the air, but yeah, we'll talk and see what we can finagle. Oh, boy. So other cool things to come out of May 4th. You guys know the Maz's Cantina.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only song that I recall, or that anybody recalls, from The Force Awakens. It was not on the soundtrack. However, it is now available as a single. It's called Jabba Flow. And it was co-written by Lin-Manuel Miranda and J.J. Abrams. And there's a cool video of Lin-Manuel Miranda and J.J. Abrams doing kind of a street performance of it on May the 4th in what appeared to be New York City. I think it's New York. I think Miranda is located out of New York, so... so it was really cool. So you can find that on YouTube. But anyway, so if you've been looking for that track, it is now available in iTunes. And a real quick shout out to Lin-Manuel, because I've known him. I didn't realize that this was the guy until I pulled up that YouTube video. And I'm like, wait, what is the freestyle rapper guy doing here? How come he is in this Star Wars thing? And then I realized, oh, crap, that's the guy who wrote the song. So I knew him as this guy that does a bunch of like freestyle rap stuff at different comedy clubs and shows and stuff in New York, performance art. And I didn't realize that he's also a playwright. And he is the guy who wrote Hamilton, the big play that's like all over Broadway right now and is winning award after award after award. He's the guy that wrote that. I had no idea. And so now everybody knows him from that, and everything I know him from is stuff that nobody knows that he even really does. So, anyway.
Can I just say that I was not a big fan of Jabba Flow?
So here's my take on it. It's better than Lapti Nek, and it's better than Jedi Rocks. So far, of all the music that is somehow associated with Jabba, it is the best of the three, easily, in my opinion. I don't like it that much either. I'm not really into the whole reggae thing. But I don't know. Lapti Nek wasn't, you know, the original theatrical version of Return of the Jedi, the Jabba's Palace song, wasn't that bad. Like, it fit. And then when they tried to do the music video thing...
Yeah.
Was atrocious. I mean, people complain about the rave scene in the second Matrix movie and how it was distracting and kind of felt out of place. Man, nothing like Jedi Rocks in Return of the Jedi. That was just like, oh my gosh, what did we break into like old school MTV here? What just happened to my Star Wars movie? But I think Jabba Flow is better than that, at least. And so Lin-Manuel also did research, and the lyrics are actually in Huttese.
Really?
Oh, that's cool.
Yes. And if I remember correctly, it translates into "No lover, lover, it wasn't me." And, you know, just obviously it just kind of repeats itself. But yeah, no, he actually used real Huttese. He got on the internet and he looked up, you know, there's some sort of a Huttese dictionary online somewhere. And so, you know, props to him for that. And it, I mean, it's really not bad. It fits the scene, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, if you're a soundtrack completionist, point is it's now available, and that's the important thing. So before we get into the other like big headline news, there were a couple of other announcements recently. Battlefront 2 is officially announced and is officially coming. That was, I think it was announced earlier today.
Yeah,
I think so. Yep.
So
that's cool news.
Do you know is there anything more about it? I was swamped at work today and I got almost nothing. So is there any more information or is it just simply that?
They didn't say anything about the game, but I think they said they were going to have a new Star Wars game like every year or something.
Oh,
something along those lines. Every year, every other year, something like that. But
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's a headline from StarWarsUnderworld.com. And it says it's confirmed for 2017. So it's only a year away?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they confirmed content from the new movies.
All right. Did they confirm single-player stuff?
No. I don't think so, no.
They better. The one complaint, more than anything else about Battlefront, has been the lack of single-player content. So I'm hoping maybe they resolve that. Anyway, that's great news. In my opinion, unfortunately, some bad news in Star Wars video gaming. Disney Infinity, not just Disney Infinity, but the entire Disney Interactive company is going away. $174 million in losses.
Wow.
For the last year. Yeah. So Disney Infinity is the most prominent part of Disney Interactive games. Of course, Disney Interactive makes a bunch of mobile apps as well. But Disney Infinity is going away. And a lot of people were like, well, wait a minute. I thought it was doing well. And we had a little bit of a conversation about it on Slack. And some people were saying, well, you know, they release a new game every year. That's too fast. Yeah, but Skylanders releases a new game every year, and it's actually much more involved a game, whereas Disney Infinity, it's almost just like a revision of the game. So I don't think it's really that. And you don't have to upgrade the hardware. The platform will still work. You can just download the new actual game engine. Whereas with Skylanders, you have to go and you have to buy the new starter kit, et cetera, et cetera. But I think part of it is there weren't really enough, believe it or not, there weren't really enough figures released. There are a lot of figures that people wanted and couldn't get. And then the majority of the figures, you could only play in the sandbox mode or in the toy box, which is not really a game. So, for example, the Star Wars, I forget what it is, Rise Against the Empire, whatever the original trilogy one is. You play through different events through the Star Wars story. You play on Tatooine. You then move on to Hoth, et cetera, et cetera. Same thing with the Clone Wars based one, and The Force Awakens. You start out on Jakku and you progress to different locations and different story events, et cetera. And you can play with Rey and Finn, and you can play the original trilogy one with Luke or Han or Leia or Obi-Wan. You can also take Obi-Wan and play him in the prequels, in the Clone Wars one. And you can unlock different things in these levels that will let you play Boba Fett in the prequels, or Anakin in The Force Awakens, etc. But let's say you wanted to play Baloo from The Jungle Book, which, interestingly enough, is the only Jungle Book character that's out there. Or either of the two Tron characters, or Mickey Mouse, or a number of different, a Stitch, or whomever. Like, there's probably 50% or more of the characters don't have an associated playset, which is what they call the game world. And so there's not really a game there for them. So that was one of the big complaints about the game. But honestly, for the ones with the playsets, I thought that it was a stronger game than most of the competitors. I haven't actually played the Lego one, but I've seen it played. I thought it was better than Skylanders. And I think Nintendo's Amiibo has been far more abysmal than Infinity. I mean, Amiibo's probably the worst system for these little figures than anything else. And I think really the sales are only kept up by the fact that some of the figures are more rare than the others. So there's a whole aftermarket for collectors. And so a lot of people will just, you know, buy anything they come across, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But this is really kind of disappointing because the Star Wars version of Disney Infinity Infinity 3.0 just came out in November.
Right.
I mean, it's been 6 months. And that's it.
I think this might have something more to do with the thing, like everything overall, rather than the Star Wars portion.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So, like, I feel like maybe Star Wars was the only thing that was really keeping it going, because before, you know, they started releasing more Star Wars content, I didn't even really know it existed. I mean, it's not my type of thing anyway, but still.
Right.
Well, that, yeah. And they had a big announcement to release last year at New York Comic Con. I mean, they had the whole battleground segment to that, where you could battle up to four players at one time.
Yeah, I got that for my son. I tried it out a little bit, and it's interesting. But I think there they kind of failed a little bit too, because when they released it, they had basically four, maybe five new characters for it, and that's it. And then otherwise you had to use the older characters that, I mean, they're good characters, but I mean, if you want to keep this going, you release new content. And I think that's another thing too. Like, if you really want the Star Wars thing to be prominent, what would have been good is release a Captain Phasma character. Release a couple of different Stormtroopers. Release Maz Kanata. I don't know. Like, make it so that the people who are really into Star Wars have something to keep up with. Release a Hera figure for Rebels. Heck, release a Rebels game set. I mean, we have Kanan, we have Ezra, and we have Sabine, and we have Zeb. We're missing Chopper and Hera, and that's it. But where's a Rebels-based game? But even just, I mean, the characters themselves, the sculpts, look great. I mean, they look good as just collectibles, just sitting up on a display shelf. So, I don't know. I feel like release some more content. Release Lando. C-3PO and R2-D2. Like, even if you combine them together on one stand or something. I mean, heck, it's freaking Star Wars. There's not a shortage of, I mean, just bounty hunters alone. You could release almost as many as they've already released for Marvel superheroes. I guess you could if you look back to the Clone Wars bounty hunters. So it just seems like there's a way they could have handled it a little differently. And I hate to say, like, milked it more, because as a consumer, you kind of don't want that. But on the other hand, as a consumer, I want to buy things that I actually want to buy and not just junk. And I don't think these are junk. I think that in the same way that I recommend people buy the ships from Fantasy Flight Games X-Wing Miniatures game, even if they don't play the game, because they just look cool on display. They're some of the best ship models that I've ever seen. In the same way, there are a lot of the Disney Infinity figures that I just think look really cool. But I don't know. To me, this is really depressing. And it's not just Disney Infinity, too. Like I said, Disney Interactive, they make several Star Wars games for iOS and Android. And I don't know what the future is going to be for those either. Now, they're still going to be doing Disney-related games. It's just they're going to be licensing them out to other companies. And, of course, with Star Wars, we already have that licensed out to other companies for Xbox and PlayStation. So, I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer. But Disney kind of owned Infinity, so that's how we got them there. And because Disney had their own smartphone system, that's kind of why we've been seeing Disney Interactive Games there. But I do have to say, I don't know about you guys, I've not been all that impressed with the smartphone apps for Star Wars so far.
Yeah, they've been so-so. But it takes a lot to have a game that I'm really interested in playing on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, it's that fine line between being too involved and too casual, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, arguably their best one is Star Wars Commander, but it's basically just a Clash of Clans clone. Mm-hmm. So other than that, a lot of these, I mean, when it comes to giving like a review of the games, I'm a little more lenient and I might not want to continue playing them myself. But I can acknowledge at least where some people might think that they're kind of fun, but a lot of them, I just don't think they've been fun. I don't know. I guess we'll see down the road what's going to happen with the Star Wars smartphone games, but I guess I kind of feel that now that more people are gaming on their smartphones and tablets, and most of the games are these stupid, you know, clicker games and, you know, run basically by microtransactions and stuff like that. And yet the devices themselves, technologically speaking, are very powerful. I kind of feel like, where are the actual games like that take skill or strategy or reflexes or something that where there's an actual game involved? Where are these for the smartphones, especially when it comes to Star Wars? I bet if we sat here for our discussion segment, and I'm not suggesting we do that this week, I bet we just on the fly with no preparation could easily pitch 10 or 15 ideas. And of those 10 or 15 ideas, at least 3 or 4 of them would be really good game ideas. And that would just be out of like a 30-minute conversation. Mm-hmm. But where are these things? They're just not there.
Well, I kind of think it takes a certain kind of game really to really attract the mobile audience. I mean, I'm not a casual gamer when it comes to using the phone at all. Like I tried Commander and it was just too much on my phone for me to handle.
Yeah.
And I think I tried, what was the other one? Uprising, I think. I tried that, which was fun.
Yeah. Now, but Uprising actually was a bit of a game. Like what mm-hmm. you did mattered. I like that. I just didn't like the inventory system. I think it was a little overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know. I want something that I can just like pick up, play on the go for a few minutes, and then be done with. But I don't know. I'm a very simple kind of person when it comes to my mobile games. I'll still play solitaire.
Yeah, I am too, Chris. I think you're right. That's what I like to do on my phone is something simple I can pick up and play and not have to be too engrossed and not worry about losing what I just did if I get called away or have to put my phone down or, you know, whatever.
Right.
For me, it's all about something very quick I can pick up and play and put down whenever I want to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's to hoping that the selection of Star Wars smartphone games in the future will be both large enough to have good selections, good choices available, and that those choices will actually be of decent quality.
You know, I'll raise you one, and not just talking about mobile games, but just gaming in general.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there were times when there weren't many good Star Wars video games and like mm-hmm. coming out when the prequels were popular.
Yeah. You know, it seems like Star Wars video games have always been either just phenomenal or abysmal.
Yeah.
Obviously, the X-Wing versus TIE Fighter games are classics. Knights of the Old Republic, which, by the way, you can get KOTOR for your iPad, and it's a wonderful port. Like, it's solid. Well worth the money. And often goes on sale from $9.99 down to $2.99. Some are just absolute classics. And then you get others that it's like, ugh. What's going on here?
Right.
Or they are hyped really, really high, and then they just, you forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I have to say Battlefront is an impressive game that I'm not that interested in playing. I wish it all the best. I'm not going to sit and complain about it. I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with what's there. I think that there could be more there.
Mm-hmm.
The other game that's coming up, from DICE, I'm really looking forward to. And I don't know if I'm just being overly optimistic, but I've got high hopes for it. I don't know. Let's, moving on in the news. We're a half hour into the show, and we haven't even gotten to the really, really big news.
So the stuff that you had in here before you forgot about Celebration.
Yes. Yes. So prior to the accusations about burying the lead, The lead was at the top, and now the lead has been buried by things that might have otherwise been buried. I'm so lost. Okay. Alden Ehrenreich, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, is apparently the new Han Solo. I don't know whether it's been officially announced yet, but apparently it is as official can be without an actual press release. Like, it is apparently a done deal. This is being reported from multiple different sources. And I guess, you know, that's it. That's who we're getting for the Star Wars film. There's not a whole lot known about it other than that. We got on Twitter, we got a picture of Han Solo's blaster on May the 4th. So that's cute, I guess. But anyway, Alden Ehrenreich, he was previously in Hail Caesar. That came out, I think, last year. Was also, which I haven't seen. Have you guys seen it?
No, unfortunately.
Okay. Coen Brothers.
Although it's on my list now.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Now we have to do our homework. Much like people have had to do with Rian Johnson. Daisy Ridley didn't really do much before TFA, but John Boyega. People were, for the most part, already familiar with Gwendolyn Christie from Game of Thrones. So your homework for Ehrenreich is Hail Caesar, which is not yet out on DVD, to my knowledge. A movie called Stoker, which I've not seen. Beautiful Creatures, which I'm familiar with, but haven't seen. Tetro and Blue Jasmine. Anyone?
No.
Any of these?
Nope.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a good thing.
It is.
I don't want to have people in these roles that I'm so used to seeing elsewhere. And now I have to, you know, look at that and think, okay, no, it's a different character. You know, I don't want to be confused. Right. I want to see just what they're going to bring to this role and enjoy it.
Absolutely. No, I think that this is, I mean, not knowing anything about this individual, the selection of a lesser known actor, I think, is definitely smart. So, yeah, so there's your homework. Get cracking. I don't know. I might pick up Beautiful Creatures. These others, I don't even know.
I've never even heard of them. So
yeah,
the only one I've heard of is Beautiful Creatures out of that. Well, and Hail Caesar.
Well, obviously, yeah, Hail Caesar. But again, it's not out yet. So I don't know. We'll have to check to see which of these are on Netflix. So much like Daniel Craig before him, speaking of people that nobody knows who they are, it appears that Tom Hardy is going to have a cameo in episode 8 as a stormtrooper. Now, he's going to be a stormtrooper, so it's not a spoiler, so everybody calm down. There is a description of the scene that he is in relatively good detail that you can easily find online. This, I think this was first broken by makingstarwars.net. It's not really a spoiler. The scene is completely self-contained. You could basically like pick it up and put it in just about any Star Wars movie. So it's not like it's, I mean, it is specific to one of the primary characters in the trilogy. So you couldn't put it in like the prequels or something, but you could stick it anywhere just as an aside, and it has nothing to do with the overall story, not really a spoiler. But if you don't want to, you know, if you want to be surprised by it in the film, it's kind of a cute moment. So I can understand people not wanting to know about it. So we're not going to talk about the actual the scene in question. But so there you go. There's another celebrity that you would instantly recognize, except you won't be able to.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to get a cameo as a stormtrooper in episode 8.
Yeah.
I'd love that. That'd be fun. I mean, if they called me, I could probably fit that into my schedule.
Yeah. I think I could find a way.
Yeah. Just to don the armor, you know, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Have you guys read Bloodline yet?
I am in it right now.
You are in it. All right.
About halfway through, I think.
Chris, what about you?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I probably won't, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
I
kind of made the decision to keep my Star Wars reading and my Star Wars buying specifically, very contained.
You're still being too vague. Nope. You got to be more specific, man. Come on, we're calling you out.
This is all about the last week's thing where you said no more than two books a year.
Yeah, but maybe.
But Chris, look around you. Everybody is saying that this is the best book of the new canon. In fact, there have been several people, old EU/Legends fans, who are saying that this, in fact, could be one of the best five Star Wars books ever written. Not to overhype it, because now I don't want to get your expectations too high, but if it's going to be this good, if you're going to put some Star Wars books off because maybe there are too many coming out, like that's great, but put off the other ones, not this one.
Yeah, I've really been debating about it. I don't know. I might wait for it to come out in paperback.
Okay, fair enough. I will say this. I think that as much talk as there's been about this one, it's going to be really difficult to avoid spoilers just because it appears that this book sets up stuff in the universe, important things in the universe, relevant to the new trilogy. And so people are going to be talking about it. In fact, at some point, we're going to have to start talking about some of the content here on Echo Base just because it'll be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much like A New Dawn or Heir to the Jedi, where you can just ignore it and not really talk about the new stories and the new characters and the new content completely devoid of that. As we're exploring this new era of the universe, this now becomes relevant, and it's going to be hard to stay spoiler free for this one.
My only question is, does it set up anything that we don't already know about?
I haven't finished it, so I can't really answer that.
Okay. You'll have to tell me whenever you finish.
Okay. Well, and another thing is, too, that there are new characters introduced in this book. I mean, other than Leia, almost all of the characters are new characters. I mean, yeah, I guess it hasn't happened yet at where I'm at in the book. I'm still very early on in the book because I'm doing the audiobook thing, and I just haven't had a lot of time to spend in the car listening. But Han and presumably Chewie, I guess, make an appearance at some point. But it's about Leia and the other people around her in the world of politics. You know, her assistants, her pilot, her competitors within the new Senate, etc. So some of these characters may end up in the future films. In fact, the reason I'm bringing it up on this episode, not just because Bloodline is new and it's relevant, you know, have we picked it up yet? But Pablo Hidalgo got on Twitter and said some stuff that he said he's going to try to keep spoiler free. And it appears to be spoiler free. The stuff he's referencing here, I don't know anything about. I don't feel spoiled by it. So there are a couple of things we're going to reference. But some of this involved things that were going to have made it into TFA. And then there are sections of it, as we've said before, that Rian Johnson, the director from episode 8, got with Claudia Gray and discussed and had input on because of ways it would affect episode 8. So there are things here that will tie into episode 8, if not direct events and direct characters, then at least this will build certain political scenarios and such within either the Resistance or the Republic in a way that'll be directly relevant to that film. So, if nothing else, more so than any other book so far in this new chronology, this will have more of a direct impact in the cinematic universe than anything else has. So, you know, take it as you will. That's all I can really say at the moment. Lou, do you have any further insights on this? You're much farther along.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little further along than you are, but I haven't gotten to the big payoff yet in the book. But I'm definitely really enjoying it. It feels like it fits in nicely. I'm getting stuff that you know, I had been talking about that I wanted on the show for a while, of, you know, what's going on leading up to The Force Awakens and kind of the state of the galaxy and the state of the Senate and how the rebellion fits in and all that stuff. So it definitely is very cool to have that kind of detail coming out.
Okay.
See, now, if this came out before The Force Awakens, I might be more interested in it. But I don't know.
Okay.
You know, I think, I see what you're saying, Chris, but I think that just given what I've seen so far in this book, I don't know if I'd want this before The Force Awakens. I mean, as much as I said I wanted it before The Force Awakens before, you know, I kind of liked the movie the way I saw it, with the no spoilers, no information leading up to it, and just seeing the movie and experiencing that. And now getting some details to fill in what that gap is between the, you know, the original trilogy and Force Awakens is nice. It's given me the backstory that I want to see.
It seems like it might be relevant. Again, I'm speaking very, very early into the book, but it seems like it might be interesting now to have it fill in these gaps than if we had gotten it before without really knowing what those gaps would have been. Like, now we know the pieces of information we're missing. Like, well, what about this and what about that?
Right.
And this might help fill some of that in. Whereas before The Force Awakens, we didn't even really know what the gaps would end up being. So in that regard, it feels like maybe this is the perfect, well, I would have said maybe a month or two ago, but this feels like the perfect timing for this. And I think that also because this is a slower moving book, I mean, I haven't had any pacing issues yet, but it's definitely more political, which has really been the only criticism I've seen so far is, oh, politics are boring. And that's fine. So for some people, it is. But really, that's the only critique I've seen so far that's been negative. But I think because it is more politics heavy, perhaps waiting until after the movie came out is a good thing, too, because I think if you had released something prior to the film that was this type of book, maybe it wouldn't have been met with quite as much favor.
Right. And the other thing, too, when you get this kind of stuff released before the movie, you're going to get some fans that have a chance to read it before the movie comes out, some fans that haven't, and the ones that haven't are going to feel maybe a little bit behind the curve and not be up as up to date as they could be, you know what I mean, going into the movie.
It's
not their fault, it's just that, you know, it's nice to go in fresh.
Everybody on the same.
The ones that have the spoilers are the ones that actually sought them out. Eric, looking at you.
Wait a minute.
But, you know, most people didn't have that, so you go into it kind of fresh and clean.
Yeah, we're all equally ignorant.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let me read some of the tweets here from Pablo. And as Pablo says, I'll try to keep them spoiler-free, end quote. And again, I feel like they are. Just real quick, the scandalous revelation, can't talk, in the book was actually a pitch for a pre-TFA animated short proposed back in 2012 called Scandal of Blood. So that's kind of interesting. I wouldn't have even guessed that there was a pre-TFA animated short, an official one, that had been proposed. That could have been kind of interesting. The disposition of the New Republic, its political factions, and the quote napkin incident were pieces that came directly from Rian Johnson. So a lot of people have wanted to know what about the book was it that Rian Johnson helped influence? There you go. And Casterfo, I think that's how the name is pronounced, if I recall the audiobook correctly. Yep. Mm-hmm. Casterfo is a character that existed in various forms in the earliest versions of the TFA story. So, again, I don't think any of those comments right there could be considered spoilers so much as they are just kind of giving us insights as to what happened behind the scenes in the production of this story in comparison with the story of TFA and, you know, where the pieces fell, basically. But so this is an example. If Casterfo existed in some form back in the early versions of the TFA script, then, you know, perhaps we'll see some form of him down the road, or we'll see some other similar characters down the road in perhaps episode 8 or episode 9. So back to your original question there, Chris, that this is some sort of evidence that we may actually see direct links from this book in episode 8. We know we're going to see some sort of what's the phrase I'm looking for here. There are definitely going to be ways that this is going to tie in directly with episode 8 as far as the environment, whether specific characters or specific events. That might be a little too on the nose, and we don't know whether we're going to get any of those in episode 8 or not, but this would lead us to believe that that may actually be a possibility where we may see things more directly in the films, kind of like we saw Snap Wexley in TFA, but we could see something even more prominent than that.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, my only concern for you, Chris, is that, seriously, of all the books that we've seen so far, this is the only time that I think that you're going to have a really rough road ahead of you in not having the book ruined for you because of the way the contents of this book are just going to naturally fall into this new universe that we're exploring. And at some point, you're going to start hearing about events that, oh, well, you know, Leia had to go through this and this and that. And for all we know, that could, you know, whatever this is could be like the big crescendo of this book. And now you're going to have it spoiled for you. That's my only concern for you.
Okay. Yeah, I've really been debating about whether or not to give this one a chance. I'll say that it's the first one that I actually was like, okay, if I'm going to get excited about anything, it's this one.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get disappointed again like I was with Aftermath.
Yeah, I can totally
understand. Yeah, it's definitely not Aftermath. I mean,
no, in fact, a lot of people are saying this is what Aftermath should have been. This is what we were all expecting Aftermath to be.
Exactly right. This is exactly what I was expecting Aftermath to be. You know, it's dealing with the characters we know. It's like a continuation of the movies. It's playing in the same events. Whereas Aftermath was connected to events we knew from before, but not quite as pertinent to what we're getting now.
Yeah.
So yeah, Chris, I would highly recommend you getting into this book because it's definitely a continuation of the new stories we're getting now, not kind of trying to play around with the stuff we've already had for years.
Now, that being said, I totally understand where you're coming from, Chris, with deciding to, you know, to maybe not pick it up, because I did the same thing with Heir to the Jedi, and I had made the same decision about Lost Stars. I'm like, you know what? I'll get it sometime later. I think I'm going to be a little more selective with which books I pick up and which ones I don't for right now, at least during the span of this trilogy, this current saga. But then so many people were talking about how great Lost Stars were. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, if it's this good, and I've already been disappointed by so many of the other books, at least maybe this will put a better taste in my mouth about Star Wars novels for the moment. And it did. And I'm glad that I read Lost Stars. In fact, there were some others I probably would have skipped over. But I do understand where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do, you know, as a peer, one Star Wars fan to another, I do respect your approach, and I think it's very logical, and I share your feelings on it. I just think that this may be the one that you should not skip over.
Okay.
Mm.
I'll definitely keep that in mind.
Okay. What else? I guess we're starting to run long enough on time. We don't have to have a separate discussion for this episode, but I feel like I want to turn this into a discussion, and I feel like both of you are going to roll your eyes at me. Craig Miller.
It's not Deadpool related, is it?
It is not Deadpool. Well, okay. It is Deadpool related in the sense that in a certain way.
Sorry, I brought it up.
You could say, in the same way that you could say that Deadpool is the Boba Fett of the Marvel Universe, except like way more zany, you can say that Boba Fett is the Deadpool of the Star Wars Universe, except way more serious. They're like mirrors. They're the same and they're opposites at the same time. It's a wonderful thing. It's like yin and yang.
Christy, do you buy that?
Well, no. That's not the eye rolling. That's not the eye rolling part.
Okay. We haven't gotten there. I'm sorry. I was eye rolling prematurely. I'm sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, hit your rewind button real quick. Who was it that brought up Deadpool?
It was me.
Yes. Thank you very much.
I had a feeling it was coming. So,
no, this is a Boba Fett thing.
Okay.
Chris Miller, who you guys might not recognize the name. I certainly did not. But he was the first fan relations officer for Lucasfilm way, way back. This is back during Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, etc. He talked recently about various different experiences he had working with George Lucas as, you know, the guy dealing with the fans. And of course, back then we didn't have social media. So he's talking about dealing with Starlog and other magazines. And he had an interesting, a couple of interesting stories about some of the disinformation that he was putting out there about, you know, oh yeah, in the next movie, Han dies. No, Han's going to be a Jedi. The Millennium Falcon flies through a wormhole and goes back in time to the Clone Wars and stuff like this. And apparently George Lucas was like, yeah, I love it. Keep it going. Interesting stories there. But one of the things that he was talking about was that near the end of the original trilogy, we all know by now about how George was getting a little bit burned out. And George wanted to get back to more independent filmmaking. He wanted to do more creative story. Not that Star Wars isn't creative. But, you know, he wanted to get back to things that were more personal, I think. Maybe not quite as mainstream. So George originally did have 12 movies that he wanted to make, and then he decided, no, I'm just going to make 9. And then he said, no, I'm just going to make, you know, it's just 6, but this is going to be the 6th movie. We're just going to do these 3, and that's going to be it. And Return of the Jedi was going to be his last movie. So basically he took what he had planned to spread out over the rest of the movies and kind of crunched it down into Return of the Jedi. And that is why, at the beginning of Return of the Jedi, as fate would have it, Boba Fett's backpack inexplicably malfunctioned. And he ended up temporarily in the Sarlacc pit until he killed the monster from within and climbed out, which, as we all know, is something from Legends that will definitely be brought into the new canon. So anyway, Boba Fett was originally going to have been the villain for Return of the Jedi. And apparently then there was going to be something about how, I don't know if this was misquoted or what it was, but I seem to remember Craig Miller saying something about Boba Fett then having to go and rescue Han from Jabba the Hutt and take him somewhere else or something. I don't know. There was going to be a whole thing there. But Boba Fett was going to have been the main villain for Return of the Jedi, and that's why he was introduced so prominently in Empire Strikes Back. That's why he was included in the Christmas special, and excuse me, the holiday special, the Life Day special. Yeah. So there you have it. We were going to have had more of Boba Fett. He was going to be more significant and not go out like a punk like he did.
I wonder how that would have played. That would have been really interesting to see how that would have played out. I'd like to see even just an outline of what they had planned.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing will ever get it. Not that I think it's, you know, going to be canon, but, you know, just to let us know what they had thought about planning for that would have been kind of cool to see.
Well, really, I get, you know, I like Boba Fett. But mainly, it's more the aesthetic of the character and the concept of the character that I like. It's not so much, I mean, I liked him in Empire, but obviously Return of the Jedi, they turned him into a joke. I get where all the Fett haters come from. And I get where people are sick of all of the fan hype about him, because really he didn't do much in the trilogy and he wasn't a very skilled character. If you've got a backpack that if you hit it with the stick, it malfunctions and then basically you end up getting swallowed up by a big hole in the ground.
Well, that lucky hit. I mean, I can see that. But
I understand where people are like, come on, get over it already.
Yeah.
I get it.
But I think it's sad
to see that it would have been more than that. Like Boba Fett would have been purposeful. He would have actually been the character that his concept kind of this, you know, Clint Eastwood solo gunsman bounty hunter, you know.
Well, you know, how much of his popularity is just from that mystique that we had from, you know, Empire, where we don't really know him, but it's like, you know, I kind of look at him as the John Wick of Star Wars, that we don't know the backstory, right, but there's obviously a backstory there, you know. This is a guy you don't want to mess with.
Right. And instead of the John Wick of Star Wars, he ended up being the...
well, yeah, I know.
I don't know. I can't even come up with a John Goodman. I don't know.
You know, but this isn't the only time they've done that. I mean, they did it to Darth Maul, too. They had this great character they're building up, and then don't use him. I'm like...
They did it with Aura Singh.
Yeah.
That everybody forgets about episode one. Yeah. And it's, you know, I think it's one of these things where George Lucas has great ideas, and then he goes and he gets them... I think he's good at getting the ideas on screen, or on film, rather. And then he's not good about getting them on screen. Like, he's good about actually filming them. And then all of a sudden he gets to the point where he's like, oh, crap. I have 2 hours to tell a 15-hour story, and it's not going to work. So, you know, Aura Singh... It's like, okay, well, I've got to change enough stuff that, yeah, I don't really have room for this character anymore. Let's just not have her at all. And then what he's left with, then he still has to cut that stuff too. Like, a lot of the building of the relationship between Anakin and Padme in episode two. And scenes of Padme kind of starting the groundwork for the rebellion in episode three, things that were directly relevant to the story that weren't about adding these extra characters in, like Aura Singh or like Boba Fett or whatever. I think George Lucas has a tendency to bite off more than he can chew. And I say that in a good way, because the guy is, I think, is just massively creative when it comes to this kind of stuff. It's just, he's got so many ideas. There's no way to get them down into just a couple of films.
Mm-hmm. I kind of wonder what it would be like if George Lucas would write a TV series.
Yeah.
Like, not just, you know, any series, but like something sci-fi or fantasy or weird.
Yeah, like if he were a showrunner, because you can have other people actually script it out. You can have other people direct each episode, but the showrunner, I mean, look at Lost. Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof, like him or hate him, I don't care. That's not the point. They wrote some of the episodes, but for the most part, it was them explaining the story milestones, and other people would come in and write the scripts and the dialogue, and then yet other people would direct the individual episodes. But it was still Carlton and Damon guiding the story. Chris, I'd never really thought about that before. That's brilliant. I think that may actually be where George needs to be working, in television, not in film.
Yeah.
But back in his day, they wouldn't let you be as creative with television as you could be with film, especially, you know, back in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s, television was formulaic. It was very cookie cutter. It's not at all like it is today. I think today Lucas would really thrive in television.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's kind of why I was really excited for the live action Star Wars series, because, I mean, look how many... scripts and episodes they had planned for that.
But I always got the impression that he still, like, the level of creative involvement for him was a lot more like it was in the Clone Wars, where a lot of Filoni was really the showrunner with Clone Wars. And obviously, listen, don't get me wrong, Filoni and George obviously had a good relationship there, and Filoni was definitely in tune with what George wanted, but George wasn't really the day-to-day hands-on guy. Filoni was the showrunner. And I got the impression that the Star Wars Underworld show would have had, you know, X as the showrunner. It was not going to have been Lucas. What I'm interpreting you saying here, that is the aspect of this that I never really considered before, was have Lucas actually be the showrunner, the day-to-day story guy, really actively steering the boat.
Yeah, that's what I would really like to see.
Yeah.
And even if you don't have like an overall arc, you could have, I don't know, a series of, you know, like short story episodes or short story arcs, kind of like, I don't know. This is probably a terrible example, but Alfred Hitchcock Presents. I mean, that's a show of each episode tells a single story, but it has the, the influence of Hitchcock.
Yeah, it's a self-contained story that doesn't really have an arc to it, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. I get where you're coming from. I just wonder if he would be too detail-oriented with the TV shows that it wouldn't work. You know what I mean? He's very hands-on. He's very detail-oriented when it came to the movie, so much so that he was taking, facial expressions from different actors and different takes and put them together into one take digitally. It's like, wow, I mean, that's really some detailed stuff that most of us aren't going to catch.
And maybe that's the problem, is there's no way for him to have the correct level of involvement because he would go too far.
That's what I wonder, right?
Yeah.
I mean, fantastic storyteller. I mean, he's given us some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
But.
And really, we keep coming back to this. I think that's the important thing that I want people to know about our feelings about George Lucas is, yes, we're happy that Kathleen Kennedy is running Lucasfilm and that J.J. Abrams did Episode 7, and we're happy that there's a collaborative team involved now, and we do see some of the problems that were brought about by George Lucas being the single guy running everything. And I don't envy him that position, but the people that were surrounding him, whether it's George's fault or not, ended up being a bunch of yes men. Please, audience, keep in mind, we love George Lucas. We love this world that he created for all of us to enjoy and play in. We are forever indebted to George Lucas. We are not George Lucas haters by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, whatever faults there may be in any of the films doesn't change the fact that the films were incredible and that we have committed our free time to talking about them week after week after week, and joyfully so. So please don't ever, get the wrong impression that, thank God George Lucas is out of the franchise. No, it's not like that. But we do see that, with anything, you can't just have one person running everything, because if nothing else, they don't have a moment to step back and take a bigger picture view of everything. They don't really have the luxury to zoom out. And so another example of this, Lou, you and I have talked before about Babylon 5. Chris, I don't know if you ever watched Babylon 5.
No.
Okay. It's a little dated to watch now. It's kind of the last of the, it was out in the 90s. I feel like it's kind of the last of that old school style of science fiction show. And now it's more the Battlestar Galactica style. Everything's darker and more worn down and everything. But Babylon 5, incredible, incredible show. And we'll probably never see anything like it again. But JMS, Joe Michael Straczynski, but he's known as JMS, the creator of the show. I mean, he was not nearly as micromanagey as George Lucas, and yet he wrote like every episode for most of the seasons. He directed, I think, the entire final season or third season. There was like an season where he directed everything. He wrote everything.
Right,
he was also the executive producer. He was the primary creative guy. And he did work with a collaborative team. He brought in Harlan Ellison for things. He brought in, he had Neil Gaiman write an episode. He was collaborative, and yet he just worked himself to death. Not literally to death. I mean, he's alive and kicking, but he worked his butt off. And it's the same sort of thing. So here's a guy who, creative genius, but it's an example of someone who I'm surprised he survived the process. And I say that out of sympathy to him. And I say this out of sympathy to George Lucas too. He almost didn't survive the process. He wore himself ragged during the original trilogy. They cost him his marriage, based on what I've read. It you know, it had a big effect on him. And so that's the way in which we're glad that this is more collaborative now. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I can probably stop getting so apologetic on it. But so,
you know, it kind of reminds me of Doctor Who.
Okay.
Because they have, you know, they have a showrunner.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally the showrunner writes episodes and has like an overall vision. Mm-hmm. And then they have people come in and write, you know, write their own while still maintaining the overall arc. So, but then you have people that criticize, like Stephen Moffat right now is routinely criticized for his involvement, I guess.
Yeah, but
you could say,
I mean, hey, you either like his stuff or you don't.
Right. And he was praised for a long time.
Yeah.
And so the tides have turned in his last season.
Yeah.
But I think that he's a good example of what George Lucas could do correctly. And I think that George Lucas has the creative vision that he could pull off that type of production. But I think, Lou, what you said is also accurate, that George would have to restrain himself from getting in to the minutiae of the editing. Like, okay, take that shot from that character and drag his face over top of that same actor in this other shot, and then we'll have the perfect shot. I mean, you can't spend that much of your time on three frames of an hour-long TV show. You know, let other people handle that. You stick with the vision. I mean, that's what we would need in something like that, a good, strong vision for things. And I think that George could really excel in long-form storytelling, where he can get things like Boba Fett as a primary villain and Aura Singh as a bounty hunter working behind the scenes on things and actually become a prominent character. All of the things that Clone Wars ended up becoming. I mean, you know, we all praise Dave Filoni for Clone Wars, but let's also keep in mind that George Lucas himself had a direct hand in Clone Wars. And we got to see exactly that. We got to see characters like Asajj Ventress and, you know, various other examples get introduced and build up in the background into strong characters that had strong effects on the overall universe. Clone Wars is an excellent example of what we could do with more George Lucas in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. I think it helped too that it was on television in terms of needing to be finished faster. And, you know, you don't have 2-3 years to do a, you know, film production from the time of drafting the story to post-production. You know, you need to have it done in a matter of, you know, months, some cases weeks, but
You don't have the luxury to be a perfectionist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think maybe if he was pressed more for deadlines and stuff.
Yeah. You know, we keep talking about what if George had done this and what if this had been different? What if Lucas had done episode 7? I want to know, what if the prequels had been a HBO miniseries, like a 10 episode miniseries? Or not
that
HBO.
That would be cool.
Sci-fi
Interesting
channel.
Cut, yeah.
Or whatever. Because a lot of the complaints about the prequels really have to do with issues regarding things having to happen too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, taking 5 hours of story and cramming them into 2 hours for something like episode 3. But then in episode 1, having an hour of story that you have to stretch out to 2 hours, etc. So, and yes, there's the complaint about Lucas not being a very strong director when it comes to directing actors. Okay, so that aside, what if they took the prequels and made it a 10-hour miniseries? I really think that a lot of the complaints and the hatred that people have for the prequels wouldn't be there anymore. I think that people would be a lot more accepting of the story, because I think the story would be fuller and it would make more sense, and it would have been explained in a way that you could empathize with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I agree.
Two of the biggest things are the relationship with Anakin and Padme. That could have worked. And the fall of Anakin to the dark side, which seemed very sudden. That could have worked. And then the building of the Republic and the Senate from episode 3 that was cut entirely. could have been there. I mean, there's so many things that. See, Lucasfilm needs to hire us just as a think tank. Just as a think tank.
It's kind of like if you took two of my favorite HBO miniseries, Band of Brothers and The Pacific, and tried to condense them down to even a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
That would be, I mean, I would still watch it, but it would be catastrophic in comparison. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way it would be as revered as it is right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's a great example. Because
I mean, and that covers a period of, you know, just a couple years.
Right.
And the prequels, I can't remember exactly off the top of my head how many years they cover, but.
But you feel something for those characters in Band of Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just one or two characters. There's a whole slew of characters. Yeah, there are a couple of primary characters, you know, Ron Livingston and I forget the other guy who played in Rome from HBO, another good miniseries. But they're obviously the two characters you follow all the way through. But even the secondary and tertiary characters, you feel something for because you have moments to connect with them. And think about the other Jedi on the Jedi Council that we could have connected with. And that had really good, interesting stories that were fleshed out through novels or comics or something like that. But we could have experienced that on screen as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's something to think about. And I think it's a really strong argument for why we need an ongoing Star Wars television series and why that may even be better. And I know that a lot of people feel differently on this, and I understand why. But
yeah,
you could argue that it could be better to have Star Wars on television rather than in the theaters.
You'd get a lot more content.
Yeah. Yep.
And the pacing would be very different. I know a lot of people are complaining about the pacing on this season of Game of Thrones while at the same time praising it. But the pacing would be different, but you would have a lot more content to sink your teeth into. You'd have more meaningful characters. You know, it would be a different type of journey. And maybe, I mean, ideally we would have both the theaters and television, but yeah.
I mean, you know, look how Disney has played the whole, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe in with,
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And Agent Carter.
Yeah. I mean, they're not needed for one another, but they dovetail in nicely.
And while they don't directly connect, if you're worried about things like overexposure and all that's just too much Star Wars and things like that, okay. So look at Captain America Civil War and Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy, these other Marvel films that are generally well-liked. And then you have Daredevil, you have Jessica Jones.
Right.
The second season of Daredevil.
Totally forgot about those, yeah.
Phenomenal television. Well, people do, that's my point. People forget about those when they're talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe because they are different. They focus on two different things. They're two different tones. But why don't we bring that up when we're talking about the overexposure of comic book content? There is talk about the overexposure of comic book content, and yet in those conversations, you never really hear talk about Jessica Jones and Daredevil because it's a different type of thing. We could do the same thing in Star Wars. We could have the Captain America Civil War type Star Wars up on the big screen, and then we could have the Daredevil type of Star Wars focusing on, let's say, you know, not to keep beating a dead horse here, but on Boba Fett, on the Hutt Empire, on, you know, whatever you want to throw into the underground, on, if you want to have it in that time period, on Maz Kanata's cantina and the people coming and going from there. We saw a lot of different characters there that we might end up spinning off from. There's all kinds of stuff you can do in that sort of an environment on television, and I don't think it would feel like there's oversaturation there because it'd be two different types of things for, if not two different types of audiences, then at least two different aspects of the same audience.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can, excuse me, I think it can be done. I think that, you know, as much as that one episode of The Forcecast we were talking with Kyle Newman about, is Star Wars on the verge of getting overexposed. And he basically laughed at us and said, how could you even ask such a question? I'm starting to wonder if maybe he's not right. If positioned properly and handled in the correct manner, I think we could very easily have a large amount of Star Wars content and not have it be overexposed. Maybe it's possible. Mm-hmm.
And you know what else you could do is, and this would solve my problem with releasing a lot of books at the time, or at the same time, you could take some of the book stories and put it into a TV series, or even just like a, you know, like a condensed, each episode tells a different story, or every three episodes is an arc, and then it goes to something else. So,
yeah,
possibilities are endless, really.
Yeah. All right. And I hate to do this, but the chat room just called me out saying that I confused Damian Lewis with, it's too far away from the screen here, Kevin McKidd, when I was talking about the actors from Band of Brothers. So, sorry. But hey, we admit when we're wrong. That's fine. That's why we have the chat room here, to keep us on the straight and narrow. Anyway, we're going to wrap up this episode. One last shout out real quick. We talked about games at the beginning of the episode. I know, Lou, you're going to talk about this on the next episode of the Sabacc Table, but I just wanted to throw this out really quick. We were talking about Fantasy Flight Games and their miniatures and the quality of the sculpts of their miniatures. And even if you're not playing the X-Wing game, you really should consider picking up some of these ships because they look gorgeous.
Yeah, just to put them on your desk or on the shelf. Yeah. They are very cool little ships.
And they're the right size, and they come with a stand. And the detail is amazing on these things. Anyway, they are releasing a set called Heroes of the Resistance. It's a box that contains a TFA version of the Millennium Falcon and Poe Dameron's X-Wing. All in the same box.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yes.
Yep.
And you can look at that, put it side by side with the original trilogy Millennium Falcon, and see the differences. It's not just the rectangular antenna array.
Mm.
There are more differences.
Slightly different paint job on it. And yeah. Now I'm glad I don't have as many Falcons as some people do that play X-Wing. Because now I can have the new Falcon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, the new X-Wing, Poe Dameron's X-Wing, actually has BB-8 as the droid.
Like on the ship, like physically?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that part.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, my gosh. Now I have to collect it just because it's another microscopic BB-8. Just because. Another real quick thing that TFA's also, FFG's also announced recently is their role-playing game system, which, again, of my decades of playing role-playing games, nothing has come close to the quality of this system mechanically. And it's because it doesn't have a big emphasis on the mechanics. It has a big emphasis on storytelling and the narrative. Anyway, they are releasing the Force Awakens beginner's game, which I presume will then lead into a Force Awakens source book. And, you know, before they did one on kind of more the Outer Rim sort of things and the smugglers and the normal people throughout the galaxy. Then they did one that focused on the military, whether it be the Rebels or the Imperials. And then they did one that focused on Force users. So each one of those is kind of its own game and yet also part of the larger overall game. So it looks like maybe this is being crafted into its own game, but then that's also as well part of the overall larger game. So I'm really looking forward to this. Oh, and you know what? We talked a while ago, like a year ago, about starting an online role-playing game session for FFG stuff. And we sent the call out for experienced game masters to maybe run something for us over Skype that didn't pan out at the time because of things going on with the network. But I want to just put this out there. We are looking for that again. If anybody contacted us before and is still interested, please contact us again. If anybody didn't contact us before and we're kind of on the fence about it, let us know. Shoot us an email, and we are looking for someone who can maybe do maybe a 2-hour session once a week, or a 3 to 4 hour session once every couple of weeks. Something that we would then record, and don't worry about handling the recording part of it. We'll handle the production, but something that we could then release as kind of an ongoing podcast series. So if you're interested in being a GM, and again, we're looking for someone who can commit the time to it and at least has some level of experience as a game master. You know, you don't have to be expert level, but, you know, just having done it before would be nice. Then let us know. Before we get to the closing, any last comments on anything, you guys? Any last thoughts on how awesome it would be to have Boba Fett, like, totally dominating the galaxy?
Oh, boy. You know, I'll actually throw in one more thing on the FFG stuff we just basically talked about briefly on X-Wing. The new Poe Dameron ship has a new Poe Dameron card coming out with it, and they've increased his pilot skill to 9.
As they should.
So now he's on par with Darth Vader and Wedge.
Awesome.
Ooh, that's good. Good name to be in line with.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Nobody in the game has a pilot skill greater than 9, so he is now the top echelon of the game.
And it's important to, I think, I mean, this stuff isn't exactly canonical because there's Legends stuff involved in the X-Wing Miniatures game, but it's important to point out that these guys have been, from day one, the people at Fantasy Flight Games have been working directly with, I think specifically Leland Chi from the story group has been their main point of contact at Lucasfilm for issues of, you know, characters and information and things like that. So, I mean, we could have a whole discussion, and we have in the past with Steve Horvath from Fantasy Flight Games, about the level of detail and not loyalty, but what's the authenticity that they have to the official Star Wars data. But the point is, while it's not canon, it does kind of bring it in line that we can, you know, off the record, we can consider Poe Dameron to be as skilled a pilot as Wedge Antilles. When we look at Wedge Antilles as like the most awesome pilot ever, I think it's safe to say that Poe is the new Wedge. Not just in the game, but I'm talking about in the scope of the stories and all that. I think it's safe to say. So, all right. Well, we're at about an hour and a half. I was not expecting. If we keep doing this, we're going to have to start splitting off Echo Base into a Star Wars news show and a Star Wars discussion show. Okay.
Well, it's alternate every other week. We'll do a news and a discussion show. So.
Yeah, we can do that too.
Because the discussion shows are really fun to do, and I know a lot of the fans love hearing those shows. So
yeah, mm-hmm.
We definitely need to include those.
Oh, definitely. And it's easier to do it that way when there are slow week news weeks too. When you commit to also doing a news show, and it's like well,
the show notes were a slow news week until we put the the main stuff back in.
But, yeah, Mr.
Sorry,
burying the lead.
Just throw you under the bus there.
All right, thanks a lot. All right. Well, if anybody else wants to throw me under the bus, you can do so via email. Send us an email at echobase@randomchatter.com. That's the best way to get us your feedback on things, any questions you may have, discussion ideas. You know, sometimes we have a week where it's like, what do we talk about this week? Let's take something different that we don't normally talk about. A lot of times we look to you, the audience, to give us ideas for that sort of thing. So send us whatever you'd like to talk about. Echobase@randomchatter.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. You can go to facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. That's where the whole network is. Though you'll probably find us more active on Twitter. You can follow this show at Echobase Podcast. You can follow the network itself at Random Chatter. And that's where we post Star Wars stuff and non-Star Wars stuff, respectively. And then each of us are also active on Twitter. You can find me at Eric Blythe. That's ErikBlythe. Lou, where can we find you?
You can find me at Lou Secchi. That's LouSecki.
All right. And Chris?
You can find me at The Curse of Chris.
All right. And you can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. We mentioned a few of them in this episode already. You know, I have to say, I was just thinking of this earlier today as I was looking through some of the past posts we did for a technical issue. We're releasing pretty much a show every day of the week. And while nice. not literally every day of the week, there are a couple of days of the week where we generally have two shows come out. So pretty much every day of the week, there's something new for you to listen to from the Random Chatter Network. And I hadn't even really thought about it, but that's really awesome. I feel like that's kind of what our goal has been all along, is to bring a variety of content regularly and consistently that you always have something that you can get from us, something new, something to look forward to. So, and I'm not saying that to toot my own horn. I mean, honestly, a lot of that is a result of other people on the network. You, Lou, with the Sabacc table, we've got the new guys doing the Retro Convo, which is a great new show if you haven't checked that out. And I continue to envy Jay and how much free time it feels like he has compared to me, because you've got Jedi Journals once a month.
I don't know how he does it. I really don't.
I don't either. He still does Jedi Journals once a month.
He must not sleep.
Over at the Forcecast, forcecast.net. He must not sleep. He's got a full-time job. He's got kids. And then he also, with Josh, he does the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. He does Scarlet Velocity. He does Green Justice. He, when Agent Carter's on, he covers Agent Carter. When DC Legends of Tomorrow's on, he covers that. I mean, he's just a
workhorse. Been having trouble trying to find time to guest host on one of his shows with him.
I'm having a hard time, like, actually watching all of the shows that he covers, and I'm a fan of those shows.
Me too. I think I've been on one of his shows this season. It was like the first episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this year, I think.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get on to another one, but I just haven't had time.
We got to get on the finale. Anyway, you know, like I said, I'm not tooting my own horn here with the Random Chatter Network. It's a collaborative effort, and I just want to give a shout out to all of the staff members we have on the network, because they're all great people. And I'm honored and humbled by the work everybody does. And we've talked before, patreon.com, if you'd like to help support the network, you can hang out with all of these guys on our Slack channel. I know some of Joel here in the chat room, I know he's a member. We've got a few other people who regularly hang out with us. Joe, both of the Jareds. It's a lot of fun. If you want to learn how to do that or how to donate otherwise to the network in a way that you get something back too, whether it be bonus content or getting to be part of our community outside the podcasts to hang out with us during the work week, head over to patreon.com/randomchatter. We really appreciate even just going to the website and not donating, but just the fact that you might be interested enough to even look at it, we appreciate that. We would also appreciate it if you'd tell your friends about the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes or Stitcher. Just search for the Random Chatter Network. It's probably the easiest way to get all the shows. And that's it. That was quite the mouthful. I think my tongue is all twisted around. So that's going to be it for this week of Echo Base. We are closing the blast doors. Stay warm and toasty, everybody. Until next week, take care.
See ya.
Bye.
The Force will be with you. Always.